composer, band leader, arranger, vocalist, and master conguero, Poncho Sanchez, one of my all-time favorites with Afro-Cuban Fantasy. It's the title track of his 1998 album, and I really love this album. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and you'll have to probably get some pen and paper to take some of the details of today's programs down, but because it's going to be a lot of information that we're sharing, but it's important that we share it today. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's hardball legal tactics in sanctioning an FBI raid yesterday on the office of President Donald Trump's personal attorney, Michael D. Cohen, has set off a legal bomb that could blow several federal probes apart. Mueller, using broad authority as special counsel investigating alleged Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election and related matters, made a referral to federal prosecutors in Manhattan, who then obtained a search warrant to collect certain documents and information, none of which we specifically know of, only a little tiny bit, I should say, from Cohen's office. There's wide speculation that Mueller is looking into whether Cohen was Trump's go-between for arranging hush money payments to adult film actress, we used to call them porn stars, Stormy Daniels, for keeping quiet about her alleged relationship with Trump. There are also other matters that are brewing, and we don't know yet quite where this raid is going to take us. But other issues have come to light as a result of the raid. Of particular interest are large donations that presidential candidates Trump and Hillary Clinton both received through their respective foundations from a Ukrainian steel mogul named Viktor Pinchuk. So when you say foundations, automatically I think of our guest, who is Charles Ortel. As you know, he's been for some time now, a couple of years as a matter of fact, he's been unraveling the mysteries and operations of the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation right here on Lead Stories. He is going to walk us through the impact of Mueller's raid and the Trump-Clinton-Ukrainian connection today. Charles, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Utrice. It's a joy to be back on with you.
Well, lots and lots of developments here, but I would say that this is the most unusual action for Mueller to take. But in what ways does it complicate things for him?
Well, if we go back to the base principles of this, Mueller was given a mandate by Rod Rosenstein, who is the deputy attorney general under Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, that began with the idea that Mueller would investigate whether collusion of any sort occurred in respect to the 2015-2016 election cycle involving narrowly Donald Trump and his campaign. And then, of course, weasel language was added that allowed or gave, in my view, the pretext for Mueller to expand his probe wherever he may want to take it. Now, if we go and we look at the public memos that are written by experienced prosecutors like Andrew McCarthy, and then not by necessarily prosecutors, but that come out of Judicial Watch or some of the people like Judge Napolitano and others who write in the public, they all note that the way the special counsel law is drafted, the special counsel has to investigate crime. And collusion is not a crime. So some argue that in the very beginning of this, the initial mandate given Mueller by Rosenstein was immeasurably flawed. And I'm not a lawyer, but I have I have gone over the statute, and I have thought about this. And, you know, I'm inclined to believe that the investigation was miscast from the start. Indeed, I would argue that for the benefit of all of us across the political spectrum, the real questions that should have been asked, and I think that still need to be asked concerning 2015 and 2016, is not, you know, whether one nation interfered in the election, that being Russia with Trump, but, you know, what is the extent of intervention in our electoral process by all nations? I mean, at one point, Barack Obama, President Obama, and others were talking about how the Chinese posed the greatest threat for interference in our business, in our politics, et cetera, using the internet and other ways. There are many nations that have an interest, I think, in getting the upper hand and forging close ties with one leader or preventing another leader from being elected. So I think if we're going to study this, not only should the mandate be widened beyond Russia and beyond the Trump campaign, but I would argue we need to go back in time. We need to go very far back in time, perhaps as far back as 2000, maybe earlier, and consider the degrees to which foreign actors, be they governments or individuals or companies that are backed by foreign governments, whether these entities route money or route preferred deal investment deal opportunities to people around the political process in order to curry favor for various reasons. These are legitimate questions. You could argue that these sorts of questions might be better asked by a joint committee of the House and the Senate in the public, so that the public actually gets in real time a better sense of what's really happening. But that's not the case in this case. So what happened is Rod Rosenstein, who I had my initial concerns about many months ago, and I've written about this extensively and talked about it, I think Rod Rosenstein needs to be removed forthwith from this process. And indeed, not only do I believe he should be a witness, I think he will end up being a target in a criminal prosecution alongside Mr. Mueller, alongside Mr. Comey, alongside members of the Mueller team. Because to understand what really is going on here, you have to go back to the beginning. And when you go back to the beginning, what you see is you see that Mueller was head of the FBI from September, 4th, 2001 to September 4th, 2013. That is precisely when, absolutely when, the Clinton Foundation frauds went from being relatively small to being the massive unprosecuted, the largest set of unprosecuted global charity frauds in history. So, you know, at the very height of the escalation of all this criminal activity, Mueller was head of the FBI, and he either knew about it or he missed it. And then Comey was the U.S. attorney in theory. He was in the Southern District. First, he was the U.S. attorney until December, from January 2002. Until December 2003, he was the U.S. attorney leading the charge, supposedly prosecuting Bill Clinton and investigating the Clinton Foundation for public corruption and other crimes, a fact that you can see listeners can see on the FBI vault file for William J. Clinton Foundation for yourselves. I was just reviewing it before I went on air. It was a very active investigation. There are two parts to the document files that are up there online that are free. The second part is very lengthy. It's like 500 plus pages. And up around page 470 or so and afterwards, there are a large number of memos that show that this was a very active investigation. And then, inexplicably, right around the date that the foundation opened on November 18th, 2004, the FBI and DOJ and other people stood down on this investigation. That makes no sense to me. And so you had Comey not seeing the obvious, Mueller not seeing the obvious, and it gets worse. Comey is then promoted to the job that Rosenstein currently has, Deputy Attorney General of the United States, a very powerful position. He's promoted that position in December of 2003 and holds it till August 15, 2005. So, you know, here, and then on top of that, you have Rod Rosenstein, who was in the Justice Department from 2001 to 2005, in charge of deciding which tax frauds get prosecuted. So these three gentlemen are all, you know, close, should have been very close to this ripening investigation that didn't go as far as it should have gone. And as a result of the Clintons, in my view, not being prosecuted for obvious frauds back in that time frame when grand juries were impaneled, they got bolder and bolder and bolder. And today we have the problem that now exists. So how do you let Comey Rosenstein and Mueller protect Comey and, you know, involving the crime, the Clinton Foundation corruption case that I would argue stretches to the billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars. How do you let that happen while at the same time allowing Mueller to go rogue and, you know, look under any rock any way he wishes to look at it? And in breaking news, actually, I just learned before we started this broadcast, apparently the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, who supposedly authorized the raid on Cohen's various places, and it wasn't just his home, it was or office, it was four different locations, supposedly, recused himself. The Trump appointee recused himself and somebody else, and Rosenstein personally authorized this raid. It's being reported on ABC News, which, you know, maybe that's fake news, but I'm inclined to believe that makes sense. So we have a situation here which I think is very dangerous for many reasons, not simply, you know, maybe to Trump, maybe to these other people. It's dangerous to the Republic. It's dangerous to the political system, because if you allow somebody like Mueller, who has, I think, many, many checkered aspects to his career, many conflicts, you allow him the unbridled authority to basically hunt for crimes until he finds one, and use the vast resources of the federal government against people like Mr. Cohen, against private individuals, even against President of the United States. There are no checks and balances here. He was never Senate confirmed for this role. I have my questions about how Rosenstein got his position. I think this reeks, and you can imagine the shoe being on the other foot. You know, what if we had somebody like this going and, as maybe one might argue should have happened, back in 2015, when the news in March first hit us about these emails, these classified emails being handled on secret servers and unregistered electronic devices by Hillary Clinton and her crew, what if early on in that period, FBI agents had raided the offices of her personal attorney, who was Mr. Kendall, I think at the time, and stolen all of her computer records? I think you would have had riots in the streets if that had happened. But because it's Trump and a Republican, people say, okay, serves him right. I think it's a very, very dangerous precedent. All of the people involved in these decisions need to be, the whole chronology of all this needs to be fully exposed to the public. And if crimes have been carried out here by these high government officials, indeed the people who run the Justice Department, you know, if there have been high crimes here, people need to be impeached, they need to be disbarred, they need to be put in prison, they need to be severely punished. I mean, this is, in my view, just as a citizen watching this, this seems to me to be a gross abuse of power, a gross obstruction of justice, a miscarriage of justice. And, you know, it's time for people across the political spectrum to say, you know, this could happen to us just as easily as it now is happening to Mr. Cohen. This is the kind of stuff that happens, you know, that happened in East Germany under the Stasi. This is crazy.
Well, we raised the first alarm, if you recall. I talked about the fact that nobody knows what the scope of Mueller's investigation was supposed to be, what authority he has, where is he going, what is the specific mandate. And it kept mushrooming into other things. And yet, some of the chief actors within his own circle were people that should have, started some kind of alarm, including Mueller himself with his contradictions. You have Comey, you have Rosenstein, and we have no questions. The Democrats, for example, didn't raise a question about the integrity of such an investigation, because the target was Trump and anything to get rid of Trump. And you get the feeling that people like Mueller in particular, they're playing both sides against the middle. Mueller must have known that he had several conflicts of interest and didn't I imagine, consult with the Congressional Ethics Authority to find out whether he should be heading up this investigation or not. So it's a lot of loose play going on, and everybody's in it. So right now you can't say, well, these people are right and these people are wrong. They're all in this mud together.
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, Yatrice, there's another development, which is that there's a thing we've talked about in the past, the FBI vault file, which is the one for Hillary Clinton. I think when we first started talking about it, these are documents related to the supposed investigation of her email, mishandling of email, mishandling classified information. When we first started talking about it many weeks ago on air, I think it only had 16 parts. It's got just yesterday, I think it went up to 20 parts. And I had a chance this morning to look at this 20 parts. It's like 256 pages. Around page 128 and afterwards, there are multiple letters from Peter Stroke, the, in my view, disgraced FBI person who, it turns out, there's feedback or something. It turns out that Peter Stroke was actually centrally involved in trying to get and figure out, you know, which of the emails that Hillary Clinton had sent may have been classified and at what levels. He was centrally involved in this whole process, beginning in he and others. The process started July 10th, 2015, but his signature is on multiple letters, not just like one or two, but like 10, 15, 20, 25 letters. He was centrally involved in this whole thing, I would argue, letting Hillary off the hook for gross abuses, both in the way in which they housed all of Hillary Clinton's emails and other communications while she was Secretary of State, and then afterwards, the fact that she was able to take all this stuff with her and sit on it until people found out about it, and then with no external supervision, decide what we should get back and what she should destroy. I mean, you contrast the kid gloves treatment, the obstruction, I would argue, by Peter Stroke of the Hillary and others of the Hillary Clinton investigation with this jackboot approach where Michael Cohen, I understand the way it works is if you're in communications with the FBI, with Justice, they're asking you questions, you're providing information, and everything's, you know, moving along, there's no real reason to do these no-knock raids whenever they occurred, storm into your living quarters and start, you know, stealing your computer and everything else with a search warrant. It's an abuse of normal practice. So, I mean, I think some very tough questions need to be asked here and answered.
Okay, so let's kind of summarize what the dilemma is here. You have a special prosecutor, presumably operating under the color of law, conducting a very secret investigation that started out as an investigation into the possible role of Russia in the 2016 presidential election. And then it starts veering off into different directions, but nobody, because Mueller isn't reporting to anybody, isn't required to submit regular reports, Mueller's doing his thing. We don't know what it is, but we do know from recent developments that there's reason to question whether he has superseded his boundaries, whether he has gone way beyond the scope. But when the scope isn't defined, and when we don't know the particulars of what Mueller is investigating, then how are we to say that he is defying, or he's gone way beyond the boundaries? He has had no boundaries.
Well,
isn't it going to be difficult to accuse him of using this so-called investigation as a political club to beat up whoever it is he feels like beating up on?
Well, I think it's a little bit different than you describe it. First of all, I think he's technically, Mueller is a special counsel, not a special prosecutor.
Special counsel,
second,
sorry.
I, Yeah, and second, I think that he does indeed report to Rod Rosenstein. And you know, it's Rod Rosenstein who makes the decisions about, you know, yes, you can do this, and no, you can't do that. And so that being the case, we have to ask some tough questions about Rod Rosenstein and his background, and indeed about his wife, who is a lawyer, Lisa Barsoomian, who I think, when looking her up, I believe she did work in the Clinton Justice Department. And, you know, we have to go back over the long track record of Mr. Rosenstein and ask ourselves, you know, in how many places if we see oddities, in how many places do we start getting really concerned? I mean, the fact that he failed to prosecute the Clinton Foundation for obvious frauds is disturbing. The fact that he failed as U.S. attorney to take action against Laureate, which I think is another corporate fraud, and a, in theory, partner of the Clinton Foundation, that aspect is not yet been prosecuted and should be. The illegal payments that were not disclosed properly to Bill Clinton of $17.6 million from a joint venture partner when they're cooperating in running a supposed university that's not regulated. And that strikes me as a, you know, glaring fraud. And that occurred in Maryland, well, centered in Maryland, but around the country and around the world. Rosenstein didn't catch that. Rosenstein was the lead attorney on the, I would argue, ill-fated investigation into Ramboxi that only collected $500 million when I think it should have collected far more in the billions for what they did, Ramboxi. He failed to see the Clinton-Bush Haiti fraud.
Ramboxi was an India-based drug manufacturing company that played a critical role in the Clinton health initiative, specifically trying to target and treat people who had HIV and AIDS, and turned out the drugs were basically bogus.
Right. And then in addition, you have the Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund. I mean, I did a piece recently on that, and the Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund was actually based in Washington, D.C. That was its only office. But somehow the parent Clinton Foundation managed to send $37.2 million to a post office box in Baltimore, Maryland. And that's in a filing for 2010 that was initially filed in 2011. And then it's in a filing, an amended filing that was issued in 2015, repeats that. You didn't see that fraud. So he was involved, I believe, in the Uranium One matter, the investigation of a trucking firm that was we have an informant apparently who is has got documentary evidence which he's provided to congressional and I think Senate investigators and others, and the informant alleges that he has proof of large amounts of cash being sent to the Clinton Foundation by a donor that was involved in illegal operations, and Rosenstein didn't catch that. I mean, what does this guy catch?
Here's the question. Rosenstein's boss, presumably, is Jeff Sessions, no?
I don't think so. Because in this case, Sessions has recused himself. So Sessions recused himself on the Russian thing. He recused himself. So I don't know who his boss is.
Well, that's a very interesting question. Shouldn't this be asked by Jeff Sessions? I mean, he's the head of the Justice Department. This is all happening on his watch. Even if he doesn't ask the particulars of what is going on, he ought to at least be in the loop somehow, and he ought to have found something really odd going on here. But we've not heard anything from Jeff Sessions to indicate that he had a problem or that there was a problem with the way this investigation started out and the way it was structured. And Mueller's role having, you know, just no boundaries. We talked about it on the program about well, when does it come to an end? What is the point of Mueller's investigation? All these resources being directed toward his investigation, but we weren't seeing, I mean, not that he had to answer to us individually, but it would have been an indication as to where he was actually going. We had no indication as to where he was going. This was a guessing game from the word go.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned in your intro the issue of Ukraine. I've been over to Ukraine a bunch of times, and it doesn't make me an expert, but the longstanding conflicts between nationalist Ukrainians and Russian, ex-Russians living in Russia, and then people of Russian descent living inside Ukraine, this is a complex stew pot. And there, of course, are also opportunities to derive economic benefits in Ukraine, not simply from agriculture, but there in metallurgy and natural gas, pipelines, all sorts of big deals are possible there, even armament sales and things like that. And so understanding which government officials, which politicians and their family members may have been trying to concoct deals involving the Ukraine, and understanding the motivations, why people would maybe turn aggressively against Russia or favor Ukrainian nationalists. These are deep questions that need to be understood. And to get to the bottom of it, you certainly want to understand why Viktor Pinchuk and his family, who is white, I think he had two wives, each of whom I believe were very politically connected, in Ukraine. I think one was, maybe more than one, was the daughter of one of the leaders, the earlier leaders of Ukraine. Here's a guy whose foundation gets involved with the Clintons fighting HIV/AIDS in April of 2004. I think it is, from memory. I don't have it right in front of me, but I think it was around April 2004, maybe early 2005. They start fighting HIV/AIDS with the Clinton Foundation at a time when the Clinton Foundation has no authority to fight HIV/AIDS. So, how did that work? How much money went from the Pinchuks towards the Clintons? For what purposes? In what years? Where do those amounts show up in the Clinton Foundation tax returns? Here we're talking about, there's somebody's written an article suggesting they believe that the Pinchuks have given $13 million towards the Clinton Foundation, and now Mueller supposedly is investigating Cohen, and leaks are suggesting that he's investigating Cohen and maybe Trump for a $150,000 donation from Pinchuk. I mean, it does not remotely pass the smell test. There should not be all these leaks coming out of the special counsel's office. This really seems to people across the spectrum, and Alan Dershowitz is not exactly a conservative Republican. He is up in arms over the way this is handling. I think people who love the law in this country and around the world look at this and say, this Mueller and his team are making laughingstocks of the United States of America in the way they're behaving. They may not like Trump, but that doesn't give you the right to persecute your political enemies, and especially in this high-handed way. So, I'd say that this is an unforced error on Mueller's part. I think it's going to end up contributing to a gigantic public outcry. That said, wouldn't shock me if Mueller has one or more indictments up his sleeve that we may hear about imminently. And we need to remember that an indictment is just a charge. It's an allegation. It doesn't mean you're guilty of something. It means the government has decided, convinced a grand jury that it's in the interest of the United States to move to criminal proceedings to figure out whether somebody can be proven guilty to the applicable standards of the crime involved.
Well, according to the reports, I'm going to come to the Clinton Foundation specifically, since we've been following that. Isn't it ironic that this is where Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, or the Clintons, have something in common, and that is a Ukrainian oligarch? having received $13 million, according to reports, from this man, Gorchik. Is it, what is the name? I'm slipping on the name.
Pinchuk.
Gorchik is somebody entirely different. Did this show up anywhere, the gift of $13 million show up anywhere in the Clinton Foundation's accounts of donors giving money to their so-called charity?
Well, most likely, certainly. But donors do not have to be identified by name to the public. So the IRS, if in any year the Pinchuk contribution in that year was more than 2% of the revenue of the entity to which it sent money, then the name will show up in the IRS files and will be there. The IRS will know exactly when Pinchuk's may have been made substantial donations to the foundation. But in addition, to possibly doing it directly to the foundation, there have been quite a few projects through what I call the Clinton Grifters Initiative, but they call it the Clinton Global Initiative, that where there's no accounting for these projects. And so it could well be, I believe there was a conference in Ukraine that arose out of one of these Clinton Global initiatives. I also think that, I believe it was Bill Clinton was paid a speaking fee in connection with one or more events hosted by the Pinchuk. So, you know, I think it's absolutely correct to have scrutiny of American foundations that are operating internationally. I think that, you know, I don't care what the political origin of these foundations is. I think it's very dangerous to have loosely, in quotes, controlled foundations operating all over the world, particularly when these foundations are led by or connected to powerful political dynasties, be it Bush's or Clinton's or Obama's or I don't care which, or McCain's. This is dangerous stuff because it's an easy way to route corrupt payments to grasping politicians who never seem to have enough money. And it's another easy way to set up closed sessions, conferences, where grasping investment managers and politicians in need of money can get together behind closed doors and cook up crooked deals in the guise of charity. So I think it is a good thing to regulate these charities, and it's a good thing to make it an issue, but it is a horrible thing to have what appears to me to be an unbelievably conflicted group of political hitmen and women going after a president they don't like in ways that are not appropriately controlled, and in ways that seem to be far outside the statutory requirements for conducting an inquiry by a special counsel.
So why isn't there some voice that says there are way too many irregularities here? There are way too many conflicts of interest. There's just too much baggage that the lead investigator has and his subordinates, and these actions are becoming more and more brazen to the point of being even outside the law. It's time to just stop right now, stop the investigation, evaluate where it is, and figure out what's next. But most importantly, to stop it, because to continue it is also to continue the possibility that the actions by Mueller himself will torpedo what could be salvaged from an investigation.
Yeah, I mean, I sad to say, I think what we have to do here, and there's so many other pressing imperatives that deserve funding, you know, whether it be, you know, better educational processes, particularly in our inner cities or rural areas. I mean, there's so many different things you can think about, improving healthcare. Sad to say, because this has been going on now almost a year, at least the Mueller piece of it, and because the Hillary Clinton email investigation has not been resolved appropriate, and because there's this Horowitz thing, we still haven't seen the report. I think we have to do it a bunch of different ways. I think the investigation, I would argue, needs to be expanded. the people who are on the team now need to be taken off the team. A new team needs to be drafted that is objective and bipartisan or even nonpartisan. We need to go back over the ground of, you know, who may have been interfering in recent elections, and, you know, not just to point fingers, but to figure out what we could do. Technology is getting ever more powerful, and these interference campaigns are going to get ever more lethal. So we should understand what happened in the past, but more think through what could be done better in the future. And that sort of an inquiry, I think, really needs to be in the public. It needs to be in the public domain. Almost anything that we're going to communicate about likely can be hacked. So to think that there's any danger of having this kind of, any significant danger of having this kind of inquiry begin looking at the history. And then I think we have to have, I don't know what the appropriate legal approach is, but we need to investigate the investigators. I mean, there is a record here of what Mueller was doing, what his team was doing. Andrew Weissman, there's a great woman called Sidney Powell, has written the book License to Lie. Andrew Weissman and Mueller and Christopher Wray and others figure heavily in that book and not favorably. So, you know, it's not like this just started to happen as one aberrant moment of behavior here. This is, you know, there are multiple other examples in the past of prosecutorial abuses. I think people across the spectrum, political spectrum, right-leaning, left-leaning, apolitical, need to have confidence that justice will be administered fairly. And I, for one, who am a staunch defender of law and order and all that, I do not have that confidence. I do not trust the justice system, watching what I'm seeing here, watching Corinne Brown rot in jail for her role in an $800,000 charity fraud at the same age as Hillary Clinton, while Hillary and Chelsea and Bill are flying around the world, living platinum class, private jets, presidential suites, multimillionaires, not having a care in the world about money. That's just not right. And, you know, we need to bring this back in balance. There isn't, you know, a political class that sits above we the people. The people in government, in theory, work for every one of us, whatever our political persuasions might be. The fact that you become, you're elected as a Republican or a Democrat does not mean that your followers then have the right to persecute members of the other party or favor members of your party with preferred deals. That is not the way the system is supposed to work. And sadly, that is the way the system has been working or not working. And in the Mueller case, you know, we're not going to get, I think, any thinking inquiry out of the New York Times or the Washington Post. It's got to come from the people. It's got to come from the alternative media. It's got to come from the people who aren't watching the traditional media. We've got to stop just sitting back and taking it. And say, no, wait a minute. You know, there are a lot of checkered aspects to the past and present. Rob Rosenstein, Bob Mueller, James Comey, Andrew Weissman, and many others. And, you know, this is, you don't get to, because you didn't like the president who won, you don't get to use extra legal, extra constitutional means to target his allies and he himself to try to run him out of office. That's not the way this works here. And yet that is exactly what Mueller et al. Are seem to be trying. And, you know, we should not take this. This is not right.
But at the same time, we're learning some very disturbing things about the president, that he possibly, or he reportedly did, using, you know, his attorney, Cohen, to pay off a porn star. And trying to cover it up. But the one thing I would give Trump some credit for is that he shut down his foundation before it went into deeper straits with the law. He cleaned up, he admitted that he didn't quite follow, the foundation didn't quite follow the strict laws for the foundation. And he dismantled the foundation. The Clintons haven't done that.
They can't afford to do that. But, yeah, I mean, on Stormy Daniels, it's a $130,000 payment. I don't exactly understand how his lawyer would have paid that amount, and Trump knows nothing about it. So, you know, there's some obvious questions raised there, and there's certainly personal potential ramifications of all that. It's messy stuff. I don't, you know, again, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know how, you know, what crimes, if any, may have occurred, how significant they are, how they're normally prosecuted. But on the foundation stuff, you know, there, Donald Trump, I believe his people, I don't know if he personally, but somebody paid, I want to say, $20 million fine. And, you know, that gives you a sense of how seriously Eric Schneiderman can take, New York Attorney General can take charity fraud when he wants to take it seriously. The crimes or the offenses that Trump was accused or his people were accused of taking with that foundation were of illegally using the term university to describe this Trump undertaking that was supposed to teach people how to make more money in real estate. Well, you know, the Clinton Foundation is still using the term Clinton Global Initiative University illegally, in my view, not just in New York, but around the country. They've never been cleared to be a university. And under New York laws, I believe they're quite strict because we have so many great universities here in this country. We don't want this state. We don't want people coming here and then just putting the word university at the end of their corporation and tricking people into believing that it's a real university. So, I mean, the Clintons, their records and their New York filings are, they're not deplorable. They're despicable. They have brazenly flouted the law ever since they set foot in New York City post-presidency. They have been operating from secret and illegal offices that are unregistered. They've been using unregistered and disciplined fundraisers. They haven't disclosed the full details about. They've had all kinds of state law violations. Their tax returns are a joke. And they've made a mockery of not just federal law, not just New York law, but federal and many other state laws. And, you know, they get a pass. So I think there's a wider set of issues that really needs to be explored here. And that is, you know, when it comes to the vital charity sector, which is so important in our country, it makes us one of the many things that makes this country truly special. It's a gigantic amount of activity. Much of it, almost all of it, is done perfectly within the law. It is good-hearted stuff. You know, lists up many, many people. People tend to be extremely thoughtful when they get involved with these charities. They're not doing it to go from rags to riches as the Clintons did. And, you know, here we have Eric Schneiderman in New York and Xavier Becerra, the Attorney General of California. You know, they're just letting these people skate. And it makes you wonder, you know, are they letting the Clintons skate because in time they hope to get higher offices themselves and play on the same old game?
What, because I know you haven't stopped looking at the Clinton Foundation, which was the reason we started this conversation in the first place about the illegalities that they are committing and have committed. What else is new?
Well, it turns out the Clintons, you know, we a bunch of us have been looking at through the filings that should be there for 40 out of the 50 U.S. states. In some cases, we've come back and the states have said we don't have any records or you didn't have to file, so there are no records. But in many other cases, we have come up with extensive records. And most recently in New Hampshire, where the charity laws are extremely strict, we find that the Clinton Foundation is in gross violation of numerous laws in New Hampshire, has been since they first tried raising money up there, because in New Hampshire, you have to have five directors of a foundation. In the very beginning, the Clintons have only had three, and New Hampshire law regulates foreign nonprofit corporations that solicit in the state, not just New Hampshire nonprofit corporations. You have special laws, and they've broken many laws in New Hampshire, soliciting illegally, reporting illegally. But what really crucifies them is what's called their statements of transactions of a pecuniary nature. That means money-related transactions. There's a special law. And in New Hampshire, if you want to engage in transactions involving a trustee, a director, or executive, you've got to give, if more than $5,000 in a year, you've got to give advance notice to the public of your intent to do something like that in a newspaper. And the Clintons have never done that. They've engaged in massive multi-million dollar transactions of a pecuniary interest in many of their individual charities. They have not registered properly in any of them. For a long period of time, New Hampshire has had, sometimes it's Republican attorney general, sometimes it's Democratic attorney general, but they have, starting last year, they got a Republican governor and a Republican attorney general. And I'm not saying that, you know, now because there's a Republican, that means they should now persecute the Clintons. What I'm saying is that for so long as there were Democrats in control, my suspicion is that Democrats said, look, we don't care. You know, you're not going to enforce New Hampshire laws against the Clintons. That's the way it works. So it's time to have an inquiry in New Hampshire going right the way back to 1998 when they started registering illegally in New Hampshire. And we're going through a process state by state of exposing the various state laws. In addition to that, I don't know, Beatrice, if you're a fan of Seinfeld, but Seinfeld had several funny episodes involving the post office police. And the post office police are no laughing matter. Post office police have been around since before the IRS. And it's a very serious offense to use a post office box illegally in furtherance of a money laundering or charity fraud scheme. And I would argue that's exactly what they have done. I believe they obtained a post office box by December 23rd, 1997, post office box 1104 in Little Rock, zip code 72203. I think they obtained that box under false pretenses. I think they have not appropriately reported to the post office changes in the nature of their charity. And I really think and hope we're trying to instigate an investigation by the post office police of this Clinton Foundation fraud conspiracy, not just the main one, but all the elements of the Clinton Foundation.
Well, we're creeping up on time, but I really want you to address the question of the international effort to basically corner the Clintons on massive charity fraud. Where does that stand now?
I think it stands in a very good place. So Nicolas Sarkozy, the former leader of France, was arrested last week, detained, I think, maybe even overnight. The prosecutor involved is a very tough woman, I believe, named Eliane Houlette, who is a special type of prosecutor with great powers and authority and financial resources and personnel. And she has proven to be a formidable rooter out of fraud and corruption. And I have reason to believe that she is, her team are well aware of the Clinton Foundation and the degree to which the Clinton Foundation has illegally sourced hundreds of millions of dollars from the French taxpayer to fight HIV/AIDS through a bogus operation that was never properly authorized. In South Korea, the former leader of that country is in prison. In Brazil, the former leader of that country is in prison. In Saudi Arabia, the efforts, well-publicized efforts by this rising star Crown Prince, you know, exacting $100 billion of fines against many big Clinton Foundation donors, I think is beginning to put the squeeze. And then meanwhile, we have the looming deadline to file yet another set of tax filings for these charities, May 15th, 2018, concerning 2017, recognizing that when you have adverse changes, adverse developments like investigations, you have to notify the states of these adverse developments. So, yeah, I think the pressure is building enormously on the Clintons and their crooked donors and crooked executives and professional firms. And I hope that, you know, we're moving to a place where we can finally understand the full contours of this charity fraud and then hold people responsible for committing egregious and bold charity frauds around the world.
Well, thank you, Charles, for being with us today and, again, adding more and more to this, what seemed to be a straightforward story when it started, but it's going all over the place. And actually, we're seeing how, at that level, what tools people use to evade prosecution. It's been quite a ride so far, and it will continue. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Yatrice. All the best.
Thanks. Well, that brings us to the end of the program. A lot to digest, we know, but we've been on this. We've been on this now for 2 years. So we will continue. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Infectious Myth with David Crowe. And we'll meet each other back here again tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening today. Bye-bye.